since this is the 4th of July, I would like to talk about how far this country has degenerated politically since the American founding. What would Thomas Jefferson think of the Obama administration? I think, compared to the Obama administration, King George looks very promising indeed.
See, I always get really wary when this subject comes up, because all this talk about freedom and the founders has been utterly hijacked by the Tea Party movement and the birthers, and people who are effectively crazy conspiracy theorists.
Well, I think that...
I mean, obviously I agree with you. There has been a massive decline in the liberties that people actually have. If you take, for example, this BP oil spill and how now you can't get close to it without getting a felony charge if you have a camera,
yes.
You know, and a $40,000 fine. What happened to free speech and being able to film stuff on public property?
Yes, and originally that was just BP's policy, and at the time I said that that was sufficient justification for the company to essentially be forced into bankruptcy because of the way they were subverting the resources of the U.S. government to censor the free flow of information and to threaten people, try to obtain essentially the truth.
Now, however, the Coast Guard is behind it, and the rest of the government.
Yes, it has become official government policy, which says something about the way this administration tramples on the First Amendment. Moreover, remember the presidential order that came out just a few months ago authorizing Obama to declare anyone, including American citizens, to be fitting targets for assassination. This makes George W. Bush, with his waterboarding,
look like a Care Bear.
Yes, seem like a champion of civil liberties, because, well, all George W. Bush did was waterboard and
he suspended habeas corpus a little bit here and there.
Yes, detain people in low-quality facilities where
really
I think some of
facilities.
Them were abused, like in Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo.
Uh-huh.
But even that is so mild compared to what this administration is doing.
Well, this administration is opening the gate for terrible things to be done. The terrible things have not yet been done, but they will be, I think.
Well,
and again, I'm always... It's funny, the Tea Party movement has been extremely successful at preventing anyone from criticizing the Obama administration, because they're so crazy. The moment you open your mouth to say something critical about this administration, most people will lump you in with them. And it's really unfortunate, that kind of divisiveness. I mean, you can't be critical of the Obama administration without people thinking that you're one of these freepers. You know?
Freepers refers to
the Free
Republic, which is
an extremely neoconservative site.
There's a lot of vitriol and ad hominem attacks
and
very unpleasant conduct that occurs there.
It just doesn't set a good example for people who do want to level these kinds of criticisms, even if you want to have justified criticisms. Now it seems like no criticism is considered justified.
I wonder, though, to what extent there has been success by certain media favoring the establishment in portraying all of the opponents of the Obama administration the way a few very unsavory characters are portrayed. Every movement is going to have very unpleasant figures, people who engage in rioting, people who engage in rhetoric that doesn't match any expectations of rationality or any intellectual standard, and any movement might be demonized by pointing to its very, how shall I say
it? Its extremist adherence.
Extremist isn't even the word. It's uncivilized adherence.
Well, I suppose I would call those the most extreme in their rhetoric, certainly. But I don't think you can really blame the mainstream media. A lot of what's been done by these groups has been publicized by them. And it's a shame, because it started from what was a positive effort. Ron Paul's revolution during his presidential campaign.
Yes.
And he had this Tea Party thing where you were going to raise a money bomb so that he could have funding for his campaign. And that was great, you know. It roused up young libertarians.
Mm-hmm.
But it's become something very different. The neoconservatives and theoconservatives saw an excellent opening for themselves here, and they co-opted the movement.
Yes.
And now they're like, blah, 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 flags, blah, 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 founders, blah, 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 Christianity, blah, 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 socialism, you know. And it sets a terrible example for those of us who do want to have a civil discourse, because they've... They've taken words that used to be part of those civil discussions and turned them into hot-button words, so you can't pronounce them without people immediately accusing you of being one of these irrational critics. You know, a critic who is a critic for the wrong reasons.
I think what's important is to drop the labels in a way. It's important for people to recognize that just by expressing a certain idea, one doesn't become associated with other people who might sometimes express that idea in some context.
I agree with you, and I wish that this was a generally understood idea that you're expressing, but most people will put you in a category with other people who have expressed ideas that sound similar, even if those ideas aren't actually similar in practice. I mean, now you can't actually level any critiques at socialism. Because people will hear you say that, and they'll think, oh, you're one of those people, you know?
It's a shame, but then that's the fault of the people making the prejudgment.
It's the fault of people like Glenn Beck, and Bill O'Reilly, and Sarah Palin. It's a kind of populist movement that's extremely anti-intellectual.
I agree, but I think there's also the fault in people who make these blanket judgments without discernment, without really recognizing particular individuals as individuals, as having their
degree,
own ideas.
To some degree, it's a blanket judgment, but to another degree, it is in fact a protective mechanism where these people are saving their own time, you know? Because with most people who start talking about this, they can't give you good reasons for X or Y, even if good reasons exist. You see? And it would be a waste of time for most people to listen to the irrational and sometimes racist rants of most of these kinds of Glenn Beck advocates. You know the sort of thing I mean. So, when people hear words that begin to sound similar to them, it is natural and, I think, rational for them to tune out. They're accustomed to hearing a certain kind of bad judgment. The bad judgments far outweigh the good ones.
Unfortunately, though, there's a whole intellectual tradition that is quite different from what the Tea Party movement has become.
It's what the Tea Party movement was at first, with Ron Paul and the Austrian economists and so forth.
Yes, and it has such a long history and such a rich philosophical background to that it's a shame to have it lumped in.
I mean, can you even imagine Glenn Beck trying to read Human Action? It's ridiculous to think about. Glenn Beck couldn't get through the first 10 pages of Human Action.
Well, Glenn Beck did, on his show, recommend The Road to Serfdom, so that's something, but
The Road to Serfdom is famous and popular. He probably recommended it because it's famous and popular among conservatives, as far back as William F. Buckley, not because he's actually read it.
Ah, well, I can't say what Glenn Beck has or hasn't read, obviously. However, I do think he sets a bad example with the kind of tone that he uses on his show, and his attempt to dumb everything down, in a way.
Oh, yeah.
Now, at the same time, it's necessary to be able to criticize the administration, because I think if that is lost, then this country becomes totalitarian by default. In a totalitarian state, no criticism is tolerated, and it doesn't really matter how it's not tolerated. Yes, some totalitarian states will kill you if you dissent. In others, people are simply intimidated into silence. The most effective totalitarian state is one which doesn't have to kill anybody because nobody dissents. Nobody wants to dissent.
North Korea.
Yes, well, North Korea, people are probably killed and imprisoned and dealt horrible miseries all the time, but
the penalties are so harsh that most people don't even bother dissenting.
Right.
It's easier for them to live the way everyone else lives.
Right. It's actually interesting. In the Soviet Union, there was an immense crackdown under Stalin, but Stalin was also extremely insecure about his own power. He felt threatened on all fronts. He felt threatened by his own highest subordinates. He felt threatened by the Polish military, and so he had his executioners massacre around 40,000 Polish officers.
Wow.
And, of course, he felt threatened by the Nazis. And first, in 1939, he signed a non-aggression pact with them, but then they invaded anyway, and Stalin fell into a depression for many weeks. During that time, he didn't issue any orders to the Soviet military, and so they didn't know how to respond to that invasion. And until the Nazis reached Moscow, essentially the Soviet army barely resisted them at all.
Huh. Which is why I'm sure Hitler felt like he was doing very well.
Yes.
The way I was always told the story, this is interesting, as an American history student. I was always told that narrative in such a way that it sounded like Stalin had done that intentionally to lure the Nazis into a trap which would then be very difficult for them to escape from.
Oh no, if there's anything more incompetent than Russian military strategy, it's very hard for me to pinpoint that. But Stalin did not have a successful totalitarian regime. He tried. But if he had a successful regime, he wouldn't need to have killed so many people because all the problems would have been solved already.
Of course. Well, but that's the case with all dictators though, right?